A Steeplechase for Love. Written by Barbara Cartland. Narrated by Anthony Wren. Chapter 1, 1867. Helsa saw her father off in the family trap and then walked slowly into the garden. She hoped that he would not find the journey to the woman who had sent for him too long or too arduous. She knew that when people were ill and turned to the vicar for help, they had an infuriating habit of talking about themselves until he was exhausted. The Reverend, the Honourable Alfred Irvine, was an extremely conscientious clergyman, and he looked after the parishioners in the village as if they were his own family. As the younger son of the Earl of Irvindale, he had not joined the army like his elder brother. He was expected to take on one of the parishes for which his father was responsible in the county of Surrey, and had therefore gone up to Oxford to read for a degree in history and theology, and this he did so brilliantly that he was awarded a double first. He was really, as his wife often said to him, far too able to be no more than the vicar of a small parish, but at the same time he was more or less living at home. He enjoyed all the advantages of a great estate and a name which was revered over the whole countryside. However, what had not been expected was that the vicar's elder brother should be killed in the Crimean War. The British army had travelled out to the Crimea Peninsula more than 30,000 strong to fight against the Russians in 1853, but very few had returned. Neglected since the Battle of Waterloo, the army was badly equipped and poorly led, and owing to muddle and misinterpretation of orders at Balaclava, 500 horses of the light brigade alone were killed or injured. The Earl of Irvindale was totally broken-hearted at the death of his elder son, and he died shortly before peace was signed. Thus, on the old Earl's death, his second son, Alfred, succeeded not only to the title, but to the house and estate as well. However, because he was so well known locally as the Vicar, he did not call himself the Earl of Irvindale, as he was entitled to do, nor did he move from the vicarage into Irvine Hall. He realised for the first time that his responsibility was far greater and more difficult than he had anticipated. Owing to the war and the fact that so many of their best workers left to join the army, the estate had become neglected and unprofitable. The Earls of Irvindale had been wealthy men for several hundred years, and their successors had carried on as if there were inexhaustible funds in the bank, and they spent as much as they wished without a second thought. As was usual with ancestral families, the head, in this case the Earl, was responsible for all his relations, but the family estate had become impoverished because of the extravagance and disinterest of previous earls. And then the late Earl of Irvindale, handicapped by constant financial problems arising from the Crimean War, and saddened by the death of his elder son, had found it impossible to keep the estate in good order. It was now in a state of sad decline, and producing very little income. The Reverend Alfred Irvine was in despair. How could he ever dispense what had become only a small income amongst so great a number of applicants? "What am I to do, Helsa?" he asked his daughter with her long golden hair and shining blue eyes. He thought, as he looked at her, how lovely she was. If things had been normal, she would have gone to London as a debutante, and would have then undoubtedly been a huge success in the beau monde, who appreciated beauty whenever it appeared. Instead of which, she had to stay in Little Medwell and listen to the endless stream of complaints and requests that poured into the vicarage every day. But it was Helsa who thought up the bright idea of letting out Irvine Hall. "Of course, dearest Papa," she had said, "you will never wish to sell anything that has been in the family for nearly four centuries. The hall has been home not only for us, but for everyone who bears our ancient name." "No, no, definitely no," the vicar replied to her almost angrily. It had indeed passed through his mind that the only way to survive would be to sell objects d'art, but he knew only too well that virtually all the valuable objects at the hall were entailed, for the son he did not possess. He would be succeeded by a fairly distant cousin.